All right, recorded, or it's recording. I pinged the link to Don and Chaz, but we'll optimize the time here and let them, they join. Otherwise, we'll just keep trucking. Marco, if you're talking, I see you unmuted, but there's no volume coming through.
Is that better?
There we go. Now we can hear you.
Okay. Every software wants to use different microphone and different device, whatnot. Right. So yeah, the first thing I noticed was that just Ajit had gone that way. I have built doctoring compatible software in the past. For example, we built a thing called Crate PDO in the past.
Yeah. I didn't realize we were.
That's
We actually started to use that at one point when we were looking at Crate.io.
ah, I see.
I might actually
I
still be in
still
our code somewhere.
so yeah, I mean effectively I don't know if there's still any code from me in here. Oh yeah, there I am. But the idea is relatively simple. You take the PDO class and you extend all of it and write tests to make sure that all the methods are reflected the same way. If there is a Snowflake client and we can implement PDO the same way and we can make it SQL compliant, I don't know how far Snowflake goes. The Snowflake, it's called, I think. Snowflake goes. Yeah, that's kind of like where the exploration would stop, but it's a big risk, right? It's like you're trying it out, running a test, and then you have this little corner of the application where maybe everything made sense, but then the software just says, no, I don't want to behave like I should. So it's a big risk on that front. So yeah, I mean, it's all nice and fine, but effectively the mixed model that, if I understood it, Snowflake has a mixed model where it tries to be a bit of Elasticsearch, a bit of MongoDB, a bit of SQL storage, and to give you a shiny UI on top. That's cool, but they need to get to parity with the protocol if they want to have full support. So for example, there's like a Postgres database which is called CockroachDB. I can't spell. And CockroachDB, what they did is they built a database and they said, you know what, people want to connect to our database. We're not going to have them write a new client. We're going to just say, if you can connect them to Postgres, you can connect to us too. And they made that. And I'm not sure how far CockroachDB and doctoring work together, but for the simplistic stuff like insert, update, delete, join, that stuff works. Could become a bit more tricky with stuff like the paginator in parameters and so on, but they have designed it that way and it kind of works. And they have done it so that you can partition data and have multiple nodes kind of like deal with the data themselves. So I'm not sure about the details, but it got raised quite a lot by people within the CAP theorem kind of group, those that are more theoretical. I'm not that kind of data scientist.
It sounds looks very similar to Secunder. What was the one from MySQL?
Which one is it? Sorry.
I was asking, yeah, Secunder and I have talked about another very similar technology, but it was specific for MySQL instead of Postgres.
Like
Single
Circle
store,
now or something.
single store.
Single store.
Looked very, seemed very, so very
Single
similar that they,
store.
if you can connect it through MySQL, it uses the same connection, I'm saying, but
Oh,
full
I've never
compatibility
seen
is,
that.
yeah.
Yeah.
Cool. Marco, I'll introduce you to Don. Don just joined. Don's one of our other engineers. He's been around for a while on the modic side. And
I think we had a few exchanges at conferences and talks and
very problem.
Twitter and so on.
Sorry, I was a little bit late. I had a delivery happen for a very large bathroom vanity.
Sorry. Yeah, we already met Don, I think. right? Perhaps I was less beer than the Stessel.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, the world is a small place on that side. Okay, so a couple of things I wanted to figure out, like agenda. What I'm perfectly fine with, you know, taking notes, like very high level notes of what we are kind of like discussing roughly, who is making which point. I usually make it with other clients, so what I make myself is just a file for now. So I would just like make myself a new file, notes. Today we have 2020-08-17, and we would just discuss here, right? And that would be a good start, and then I can just copy it, put it in an issue, copy it, put it in an actual file, and then maybe a merge request, a pull request that I just close. Doesn't need to be merged, you know, but we have a reference to something that we discussed. All right. Do you have any preference? Do you have a Confluence, a Jira, an issue tracker, anywhere we want to put this stuff?
Yeah, I think this is focused on the community. We have a community Confluence page that we can move this to. I think, you know, that's the other side of this. If you know, you're not opposed, is if we record this, I can provide the recordings. We can go back and wrap up the notes and things like that, or write them out in the Confluence pages, just to optimize, you know, that, just so the time's not taken up in note taking. Rather have those more meaningful conversations with you, and I'll introduce you to our pull in Ruth Cheesley, who's the project lead on that side, and invite you to the Confluence side so that you can access to it, and then add notes to that or things that we missed, if you're good with that.
Yeah, and recording is perfectly okay. I mean, if you want to store them anywhere, I don't mind. I'm gonna try to keep it relatively professional. I know I'm a full-mouthed Italian. Sorry about that. so if you sometime hear me drop a four-letter word, it's not super intentional. It's just part of my dictionary that I'm translating from Italian.
no one's gonna take offense to that. So.
Okay. Well, then I guess let's dig in first. Do we have any topics we wanted to discuss, wanted to start from?
I think there are two ultimate goals here. One is, what are we doing with Doctrine that could be done better in order in terms to get scale, more scale out of it and things like that? And then looking at maybe some of our workarounds and see if you have any experience around how to optimize those. Sekunder, Don, do you guys have any other thoughts?
Not at the moment.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, let's try and dig something up, like an issue or a discussion or a piece of code that we want to look at. Let's try to go from there.
Yeah, so I can... we're running into with our Doctrine implementation. We can start with, let's start with the easy one, which is our custom fields on the lead object. We'll refer to them as contacts because we later renamed them to contacts in the UI. But in the code, they're still referenced as the lead object. And one of the things that, you know, Modic has the segmentation feature where it's building these segments based on complex filters or on whatever number of filters. And so your we decided early on in the project in an attempt to decrease the complexity of segmentation, we would manipulate the columns on the leads table. So it's live schema changes, of course, Doctrine does not support dynamic properties because of using reflection, and so we've kind of worked around that by basically taking that part outside of Doctrine, and you know, the when it comes to like ordering by these custom fields, it will, it does one query to get the results. And then for the DQL, it does this crazy case statement to make to control the order of those results, since Doctrine doesn't have access to the custom fields. And so for every time we go to query for contacts, we're making twice the number of queries, plus doing a, when we do them in bulk, it's doing a an optimized way of dealing with ordering. Right? So just curious on, so that's the first big problem, right? I mean, there may not be a good answer there, but I know there's, so curious on kind of your take on how others have solved this, if it's more of a columnar store relationship thing between multiple tables, or I don't know, I'll just throw it out there. But
well, let's look at this.
What are your thoughts?
Let's look at what a lead looks like then. Can you like point me, you said that there's dynamic properties. Can we like look at something that is doing such a query somewhere? Or even if it's a graph of multiple things, I have the project checked out, so.
Yeah, look at the lead bundle entity lead.php. Actually, look at the lead repository, sorry.
Lead repository, I have multiple. I have
the one in the lead bundle.
Okay, custom field repository trait. Okay, that sounds
so what this is, so this is used, we have two objects that follow a similar way of dealing with this. That's companies and leads. And so the trait kind of helps not have to reproduce the exact same code between the two. And I will take a step back and admit that all of this early code is not very solid. It's we learned a lot over the lifetime of this, so forgive the lack of best practice in some of these implementations and lack of interfaces and things. But
that's right.
Yeah. So, but with the lead repository, it's if you look at the get entities method. Modic kind of filters everything through a model class for each type of entity. And in that model class, we'll dispatch various events in order for other parts of the product or plugins to be able to action on those. And then those all go through the repositories, get entities or save entity or delete entity or whatever those shared methods are. For the lead repository and the company repository, you have all of this crazy code in here that will go and fetch relationship data, fetch company data. It's all workarounds because of custom fields.
So this will contact count. Wait, this is get so, entities. The contact count is contacts, which is like fetching the entities. I suppose this is done by the potentially the trait. Yes.
The trait. Yeah.
Okay, so you're fetching an object, which is the lead. Okay, would have expected object, it's the string. So that's the definition you have somewhere.
This code is,
No, that's fine. It's don't worry, I see code that is like makes your skin crawl. That's not a problem. More wondering about navigation, trying to make sense of it. So we have an object definition. This is probably a reference to some sort of map that is a definition and metadata definition somewhere. Then args, this is just a pass through for, I guess, criteria. And then a callback, which is applying some declaration on top of the result. I guess something like an array map kind of thing, perhaps lazy or something like that. All right. And so we get the field list. This is probably where you say there's a, this is where it's done the second query where you need to figure out what can you use for sorting and so on. This is doing a row query, SQL, not DQL, probably performance as well. Imagine that it's going to be a mess, and also it's probably going to cache it. So you have you no longer repeat this query, but then you still have one query more per request. It doesn't sound like a heavy query. You're just like doing a select. It's now joins, just a sorting, nothing special going on.
So I guess technically this would be a third query. There's probably a lot of other queries in there, but that it fetches the list of custom fields with the first execution of this, and then after that it will do the ORM, and then it will do where it'll fetch the actual data itself. That query that you were showing a second ago is just fetching the metadata around the custom fields.
Yeah, that is fetching the metadata. So this is the first query, then convert to ORM properties, convert ORM properties to columns. Is this using the metadata API for the ORM? No.
So this is using, this is a, through the UI and through the API, you have ways of doing kind of search sentences or where queries. And so this is kind of converting those into SQL or DQL.
Do we have a, so because like I'm seeing this as a very, very flexible repository. It's so this flexible. Is one method. Exactly. That's like, because I don't see anything wrong with this. I built this like, I think 7 times I built something like this in my life. Where I went through the like trying to solve a kind of an approach of how to filter, sort, and render a table with results that come from joins, from a query, from other things that nobody actually understands, and then trying to present a simple view to the user and build a UI once and not go crazy 20 times with it. And I understand that need. I'm just trying to figure out whether there's a cut to be done. So does anybody have a UI where this, for example, would be super necessary, for example? This configuration of like, I want to have these 7 columns, but I don't want to have this column. And I want to have this column and it needs to be sorted as an integer, please not as a string and not as a date. Something like that. That's kind of what I'm thinking, right? That's what you have as a scenario.
Yeah. Yeah, I think the, maybe in our reports UI, we allow sorting by an order. Other than there, it's the order really applies to the API. Our contact list in the UI today is fixed to specific fields, which they're core fields. We make them available as properties on the entity because they're always available. We don't allow customers or anyone to manipulate those particular fields. So the real use case, I guess, would be through, or the main use case is through API, being able to order through the API, the REST API.
Mm-hmm.
And this, the code, the API, the UI, pretty much anything that fetches entities or things, they all go through the same code, which comes down to this. It's part of that flexibility in this as well, is because it's reused in many different scenarios, which again.
And get entities is at the core of everything, or like a repository when you fetch things allows you to do this all the time?
Like, yeah, they're kind of throughout, it's not interface, but it's kind of the common way of implementing throughout the bundles. All entities tend to have a model so that through controllers, through API controllers, through executions or commands, they all end up coming through a similar code structure. But it's not interface, right? So.
Yeah, like I was wondering actually if somebody can actually screen share a UI where this is running, where we can see this somewhere, a demo system. You can take over on that.
Oh yeah, I can do that.
What I'm wondering is if this is used internally, or if it's really just for when an administrator browses the UI. Because if an administrator browses the UI, we don't really care about scalability that much, right? it may be a slow UI, but it's still an administrator that is going through individual leads. Now, of course, you're operating in the US, but in Europe, you're not even supposed to see the single leads and the details about them, except for the anonymized data, unless you're a GDPR officer. So I'm wondering if it's more of a use case where we can actually split, we say internal calls use some API and external calls use the flexible API with the performance impact. It's just what I'm thinking, but I haven't looked yet at how the custom fields are selected.
Yeah. All right, so modibox.com is a community tool that allows you to kind of just test any PRs that are active right now. And then you can go to the latest, not this, let's see if it's broken. I hope it's not broken. I know they're in the middle of the big version switch, but I guess this will give us enough for this call.
Okay. You go to the staging branch.
The staging's, yeah, this might be a little outdated because staging is no longer used, but as far as the overall interface and experience, it's the same.
Yeah, that's kind of what's still in the progress of improvements.
Yeah. So when we're looking at, this should all be fake data. This is public, so it looks like, yeah, this looks like it's generated from the fake name generator.com. I recognize these domains. So this is the main UI for seeing contacts, just kind of listing them here. So you can you can order these, but your name, first name, last name, email, things like that, addresses, those are fixed properties on the doctrine or the lead entity. So we don't show custom fields here.
Okay, in this case, you don't have the custom fields, but we have at least an example.
Right. So in this one, I mean, this is just viewing a single contact where we just make the simple query to hydrate the custom field data to show it in the user experience. I know there has been a feature request to make this particular, to customize what columns show here. It's obviously not been prioritized, but I guess that would be, if we look towards that, that would be a use case of pulling in the custom field metadata here.
But effectively what I would see is just more columns. That's all that happened, right? I don't really need to see more and worry about that. It's more like, just wanted to try and understand. So this is the admin interface. From an API perspective, you would also query this. I'm wondering whether, I don't know if it's Motic or Mautic. I know the pronunciation. What do you call it internally?
I think I say Mautic, but people do call it Mautic. And so there's a lot of, it's like Shannara,
I'll mess it up.
That series, but.
But effectively, I'm wondering if API consumers are doing a heavy use of this, or if we internally are using this heavily and it's causing their problems. Because I can imagine that when I'm fetching leads to do some operations, like figure out everyone who didn't poke me back in 14 days, something like that. I probably just want the lead. I don't need all this custom field information during the operation itself. See what I'm trying to make? Like the scalability of the system will be like, I have a million contacts and I need to send a million emails, right? And it needs to happen now. Like pump through the data. I don't want to have 100 records per minute because it takes so long to iterate upon them.
Yeah.
So I'm wondering if you can, if that is the use case, or if the use case is really the API side, and the API side is where it's heavy.
Yeah, that's a good thing. So good point. With emails, right? The thing is, when we have emails, we have the ability to inject tokens inside here, which are going to be your custom fields. Right? I don't know if it's going to work. I'm gonna create a new one.
So you're showing me a campaign builder. This is like building a template, right?
Yep. This is building your email template. So inside here, you know, you have these different contact fields, which all of your custom fields are available to this. And then when we go to actively send the email, then we're creating basically a list of mail merge vars. And each, like Spark Post and Grid, all of them have a different way of sending it to them, but they all come down to the key value pair. And so we do need that data when we execute on this. Similar thing in campaigns itself, like SMSs, dynamic content where you can customize landing page experiences, emails, all of those support contact fields as tokens so that you do those mail merge var type things. And then in campaigns itself, when we're executing these, then you have options of like a condition where you can evaluate that contact data field based on to send them down one path or another. And the campaigns, you can create this, you know, send an email. If they don't open it certain time, do something. If they evaluate certain conditions based on various values, then do something else, right? So this is where you'd have to have that data as well as we execute campaigns. And then when we're actually segmenting on them, so segmentation in our system doesn't use DQL because it's just a raw query. Give me the contacts that meet all of these custom filters and whatever else. So we do all of that. And we create a query builder and execute it outside of the entity manager. But that segmentation, of course, needs access to all the contacts. But that's not within the context of the entity at all. We're doing that just a raw query.
Yeah.
Does that help?
No, it makes sense of the, it makes the use case very clear. So now you have an entity that has a field key value map attached to it. You need that entity to be populated with all the key values that apply because otherwise your template will probably crash or something like that. Maybe not crash, but render some gibberish somewhere. And then effectively you have rules. So you fetch the context, then pass them through a filter that says, please only those where age greater than 18, for example. Those also define that. And then you have the necessity to expose. I'm sorry, I'm just repeating to just make sure I understood everything. You have the last use case is create a segment and then allow people to do whatever they want with the segment. So the segment is like a query builder, if I understood it.
Yes.
And it's like exposed to the outside world. Is it also exposed to the inside? Like, is it important to be exposed to the outside world there or?
This one's mainly internal. Now we do have a feature where it'll put segments on a preference center to where if you click unsubscribe from an email, you can remove yourself from specific segments. But mostly this drives all the execution within Modic, right? For this determines how they get in and out of campaigns. This determines if they receive an email broadcast or not. Segmentation is kind of see, there's all these custom fields here, and then there's also kind of mixed in behavioral data, like visited activities and stuff like that.
Yeah, fair enough. Is there, how is this data represented at entity level? So I would switch back to my screen if that's all right.
Yep.
Just trying to make sense of it. So mostly I want to see how the lead is actually composed at database level. We have any definition somewhere of this schema or something similar? You said that those are dynamic properties, right?
They are. So if you're looking for the entity metadata, do use Doctrine's PHP driver. It's in the entity folder and the static method. I don't know what it is. Get metadata. Maybe entity metadata. Mm-hmm. But if you go into look in the lead entity inside of this folder, here. And then and then scroll down one of the first two or three.
The load metadata method.
Yeah.
Oh, I see.
there's a long story behind why we do this. Sorry to bore you with that, but it.
Will this perform so this, one query per entity then when you load them?
I'm sorry, what was that?
Will it perform one? Will it lead to an N plus one problem here where you load the entities and after you load them from the Docker side, you need to load them from the class metadata builder side as well?
It's
mixing concepts because I don't know them yet, but.
Yeah. Now in this case, if the application happens to be querying on a one by one basis, then yes. But that's where the get entities come into play, where we will do a query for your entities, aggregate their IDs, and then do a query for all other data and then hydrate the objects in batch. So it's not a N plus one type thing.
So you have two queries if you have one result, 100 rows, and then fetch it. I'm just seeing because this is like, has a public static. Okay, this is static, never mind. I thought this was where the lifecycle event went. So you have this loading mechanism, it then converts the parameters and sorting here. It will build a where clause. You select the records. This seems to be like the query builder for the pagination kind of thing.
Yeah, because we're paginating on results that deal with custom fields. This leads do not use paginator. Other entities that we have use paginator, but this is a
yeah. And then you work around. Oh, there's a lot of stuff going on here.
Oh, there you go. That's what I was mentioning. So this is where we're creating that case statement based on what was queried on the custom fields. So this is generating a DQL compatible way of ordering on those custom field data.
Yeah. But this is creating a, so I don't understand if this is this all happening in DQL or is there a SQL part as well happening? Like the SQL part we saw up here, that part is clear. But is there another SQL part or is it the whole happening? Yes. Is it just creating one giant DQL query?
Now you say on that line 66 there, that's SQL. Right? That's just using the database abstraction layer. Or not 66, I'm sorry, 64. So this is just using the database abstraction layer. And then once it has those results, it goes into building the DQL side of it. It hydrates the values into.
So this result is what exactly? Is it like the result of your filtering?
Yes.
Based on the custom fields?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay, so effectively what you have is very similar to what other systems have, like, for example, I have a similar problem with another customer where they have an Elasticsearch system. The Elasticsearch system has the search results and the ORM has some other information, like how much stock information, how many, if your customer has access to this product or stuff like that, that changes dynamically. There's business rules, there's complex queries, but you need to kind of like make them cope together. So you mix the identifiers from one result with the identifiers of the other result, kind of. I'm not sure if that's what's happening here because like it's selecting the identifiers. And then from the identifiers, I guess this is creating the S count.
That's for the pagination. Like this is mixed.
That's just for the pagination. Yeah, but the result is itself here. What will the result itself look like here? Like if we were to look at the actual result variable, what is it? Is it an array of integers? Is it an array of...
No, it's going to be, if it's not the pagination query, it's going to be an array of key value pair on the scheme of the lead table. First name, it's going to be an array.
Oh, this is the definition. this is the definition of the fields, or is it the values of the fields for those contacts? That's what I'm wondering.
Values of the fields for a list of contacts.
I see. So then you have one query, then you do the second query, which is just fetching the same results, but based on the entities. And then you get results for those entities. Now you have the entities. Now you iterate over the entities and you fetch the fields for those identifers. So you have two result sets. You're building in memory one and then populating the other one as it comes into memory. So this will probably also be problematic if you need to ever stream data, like create an XML feed with hundreds, thousands of items, because you can only batch that much without going out of memory. By the way, that happens anyway because you're using the ORM, which is terrible at this. And then this is the callback that we saw here, I think.
And we are very conscious, although I know that newer version of Doctrine, we haven't really looked into what to do, but we are clearing entities all over the place to control RAM. Yeah,
it's the same thing. It didn't change and it won't change in ORM v3 anyway. There's like intentions behind it. I'm way out of development cycle there. I no longer do the Doctrine development myself. I gave up. this is parallel results. Obviously not good. My university professor would have killed me if he saw this. He was always of the idea that if you have two parallel arrays and they mean one thing, you have something wrong. But that was his thing. It was his fixation. But we're talking about like 15 years ago or something like that, 20 years ago. I don't remember. So anyway, the problem is effectively that. And I think the cleanest solution is really to not go through this. Because you build layers upon layers of magic and it will be really, really hard to disentangle. So I know it's a bit heavy for having just a consultant tell me what you probably already discussed multiple times internally to not do this at this level. But effectively what I'm thinking is, can we not go through the ORM for doing this? Like, what is the need for the ORM to do this?
Yeah, I think the main thing, well, the question is no, we don't necessarily need the ORM to do this. I think it becomes we've written all the rest of the code to expect and work with the lead object, in which the lead or contact object, right? That's the center of everything in the application, pretty much anything that we do other than creating a new landing page or email, like, all has to do with the context, right? So throughout your code, when it's executing campaigns.
What does a lead look like when it's populated with data? So I'm looking at this, jumping into the custom fields, and then we have a set fields, right? Set fields is where we're operating. That's the one that we are doing here somewhere, right? That's the one that is lead repository.
Yeah. I mean, basically the object, it has some, if you go into the lead object, pretty much everything goes through that fields array. Everything that matters goes to that fields array. It gets get fields that you're in, or the field, it's this field.
This one.
So everything pretty much goes to here, right? It manipulates this internal array of cached fields here. We do some various magic so that you can make it work as a getter setter, whether it gets updated or stored. There's a couple ways of, I snicker because in hindsight, yes, it gets transformed because there's the concept of grouping together custom fields into like core, social, I don't even remember what else we have in here. So it gets transformed various ways, but pretty much everything gets stored, the data itself is stored in these two fields and updated fields.
So fields is just like the state you fetch, and then updated fields is whenever you set them, that is not done by a repository. You make sure you track it so that then you can like have a URM look at it and update things.
Yep.
Okay.
And so everything kind of gets manipulated through this, right? We have get profile fields if you need the entire key value mapping. Otherwise you interact with the getters and setters. And then there's, it's also, we have an audit log built in the system. So a lot of your setters will track those changes in order for a listener, Symphony listener, to kind of extract those and translate it into an audit log entry.
So if there's a setter or a method exists, and then you can probably override in the setter and say, I'm tracking a change or something like that.
Yeah. But these are just, what I'm wondering is kind of a hack to make it act like an ORM entity.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah. I mean, it's clever. It's both the good and the bad part of clever. I don't know. Clever in German is a denigration. It's not a positive verb. So it kind of makes sense.
So the,
it's just,
yeah. I mean, so it's the suggestion. I mean, to get away from using a lead object altogether and just kind of deal with arrays or a more of a DTO, just very simple object rather than a
lead entity. Could be, I think you need two representations. One is how is the field in the entity, and one is how is the field at storage level. One thing that I did not see so far is where are the fields actually stored? Are they in the same table with the contact?
Yeah,
are they, they're
in a JSON column or something like that, right?
They're in the same. That's the, whenever you add a custom field, it manipulates the schema to add a new column to the database. So it's lots of limitations around that and scale implications, but yeah, so it's stored as a column on the actual table.
So that's also a problem because an alter table will bring down the entire system until you've got a new column somewhere.
There is that potential, yes. Now there is code changes, and we've implemented it in the cloud. The community has this pull request of doing that in the background, and it actually detects for ongoing segments. As long as a long-running query is not running at the time you make the alter table change, MySQL handles it. Right? It won't lock the tables. It'll be okay. But if you have that long-running query that it's waiting for a metadata log, that's when it becomes problematic and brings your whole system down. So we've tried to work around that. But yes, it is a problem.
So from what I can say is this is generally solved by having not custom columns in the schema, but rather having just a blob field that contains JSON data. And then moving the responsibility of saying this must be an integer, this must be a string, and this must never be below 5, for example, moving all of that in the application. This is terrible because, of course, you can't use the metadata at database level. And there's also the consideration of what did the community do so far at extension level? Like breaking compatibility is always a problem as well. The alternative that I'm seeing is to have a system. So one way is we change the schema and have what is custom in a blob field where we have the definition somewhere. But you do one scan, and then you just like take that JSON field and you convert it into a value object that you can use. And then you can use the magic getter and magic setter to just pass through to the fields in that value. And you have one single scan. So you have one query. PHP does a very lightweight operation over every row and extracts the fields and packs them onto the entity, ignoring obviously any collisions. Like collisions will be like kick out any custom field that tries to collide with pre-existing fields. But it also means that you could have an absent field, because obviously that's like the disadvantage of going schema-less kind of. You have now a JSON field. There's no enforcement of any sort there. That's one way. The problem also there is anyone who wrote a SQL query that is to be designed to run with Motic will have to redesign them. Also not good. So, but what you want insight
segments, right? Yeah. our segments are kind of built around the fact that these columns exist on the leads table. So we'd have to refactor that, being able to build segments and filter on those.
So the other alternative that I see is instead of designing around the ORM and trying to make a dynamic system work with the ORM, how about we make the lead entity a dynamic generated piece of code that has custom definitions on the columns? So what happens is that when you define a custom field and it's called, let's say, potato, what actually happens is that you have a public int potato. It literally does that. So it will have a bootstrap step in which the entity actually has these new fields and the code can reference them. So you can reference them directly in DQL queries. You can reference them directly from pretty much everywhere, but you need to have a warm-up step that uses the metadata definition and mixes them with the ORM schema definition. The ORM can generate entities. It's probably not the entities you want at this point because there's a lot of API that is obviously yours and there's no way, but we can say there's a template, PHP template here, right? That this is for the custom properties. What you get from this is that now the ORM is tracking all the changes for you. Again, the field types are enforced. And you get the speed and the query builder from the ORM back. Disadvantage is you have some code generation. So if you have a deployment where you say, oh yeah, you know what, the source directory, you'll never get to change that. That's also kind of a problem. So
we're thinking here of a cache. Shoot, I always use different names for it, but the cache builder.
Not even a cache.
Service, no.
More like
I'm talking about Symfony's cache, like Symfony's container. During one of the processes writing this file.
During the installation, you go through the custom fields, like the custom field definition. You define a new custom field that's kind of like an administrative operation in your system as it is. It will add a new column. It will have an effect. It will have an alter table on a schema somewhere.
Yep.
On a running system, you can imagine this is a big problem for a sysop that gives access to some secretary kind of position person that has to work and just adds a column. And then you immediately have an alter table in your like production database and everything goes crashing and burning. But you see what happens is generally if a big corporate uses Motic, they will probably have locked off DDL support. You will not be able to perform an alter table from the user that connects from Motic to the database. That's what I'm saying. They will have locked it off. Or you may have locked off support for writing to the file system where the application gets deployed. So these are the limitations. So they reduce the scope of what you can deploy. It sounds like you already are in that space though. Right. Motic needs access to the schema in root mode, kind of, in order to operate.
Yeah.
Right.
It does.
So I'm really thinking this could be without breaking everything. That's kind of like what I'm thinking. Like without breaking everything, have this class, which is a lead. Do you have an XML mapping for the lead, Manuel, somewhere?
No.
Or a YAML
mapping? That's where that load metadata API comes in. It's Doctrine's PHP driver. We don't have.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, but that's kind of like what we want. So we want to have part of this, and then somewhere it loads the core fields. Where does it get the other fields from? It doesn't get them, right?
Well, there is we do have a Doctrine subscriber that will register them so that the command to do the schema, Doctrine schema update. We don't typically use it. We usually do it just to compare and to create migrations and things like that, but just to keep that from accidentally removing all of your custom fields. So there's a Doctrine subscriber, yeah. I think, in this bundle that registers them so that at least Doctrine won't delete them on accident.
Well, but you, I see what you mean. Yeah, the schema tool does that kind of. Yeah, I'm thinking that effectively what you do here is you pass me a actual DB defined custom fields somewhere through buried through a row SQL connection, and you say if the connection doesn't find the table for the custom fields, that means we're creating the schema for the first time, right? Something like that.
I don't have control of this though, because doctrine, like this is doctrine stuff. Like this load metadata method is registered with doctrine.
That's just a class metadata driver. There's like a driver. There should be a driver, annotation driver. No. Let's look at XML driver. Is there any XML driver? Yes. Mapping drivers. Let's look at this. So Doctrine has these drivers generally.
Yeah, and we're using the PHP one.
Right. And you're using the, which by the way is deprecated. What? Common PHP driver. Because it's in the common system now. But there's nothing preventing you from saying, I'm going to go and implement mapping driver myself.
Mm.
And in mapping driver, you can say, if you go to this class and just this class, then query that table, and you know the metadata is going to be this one. Now, what the Symfony system will do is after this has been queried once, it will cache it on the side. So what you can do is when you add a column somewhere, you can say slam the entire cache of the entire system, and then let's continue from there. So it will perform one query, which is literally one query at deployment. Somewhere like you do, like literally add the, I'm just going to add it here just to make the example. Oh, I can't because I installed it via Composer. I'm going to make a class my custom fields metadata driver, right? And I'm going to say public function construct. And we have here a, what's this called? Is a Motic custom column definition fetch metadata. Making it just very clear that this is not the metadata that it pre-queried. It's the metadata, it's a service that will query the metadata when asked to do it. Right, and then you have a public function. Well, this implements what is it? Mapping driver. And now we can add methods and we can say, it doesn't belong to the project, yeah. Of course. That's because I'm using a Scratch and Scratches are special in PHP Storm.
Yep.
Right, and so here what you do is you say, I'm going to return, you're going to have another mapping driver here. Next, so this represents a chain of responsibility pretty much.
Mm-hmm.
And the chain of responsibility then says, I'm going to load for class and you say, if class name equal exactly that thing that we're like, what is it, the lead?
Mm-hmm.
And do something, otherwise return this next load metadata for class. This is one approach to do it. Obviously, we are going deep into hacks, of course, right? But yeah, I think we are way past that. And I feel the system that we have now is too systems talking to each other. ORM is an extremely stable system. So even if you're stuck with ORM2 because ORM3 has little changes in how the mapping drivers work. And by the way, I can tell you ORM3 is not going to be very different for a lot of years. I don't expect a major rewrite. So from business perspective, since, pardon my French, we're already fucked.
Yep.
Let's at least do it with a tool that is going to be relatively stable and do it in one way. So what we have to do here is we say, if the class is lead class, then we say generate, well, actually we do meta or custom fields is equal this fetcher give me for class name, that gives me the fields. And then you say here, you have to do a bit more magic for the fields that are reflection fields that do not exist on the entity yet. Because we have a lead that has been outloaded, because otherwise the entity system will not recognize it. So the lead has been loaded the first time. So we have an entity with potentially missing fields at this point. And now we say generate lead, generate class for lead, the class name and the custom fields. And you say slam cache. This is the idea kind of how this could be working. I'm not saying it's an intelligent idea. It's a way of solving this. And then for all class name, you do effectively this next get all class names plus merge it with the lead class. And then is strangeGen, you say, well, the implementation of is strangeGen is just this next is strangeGen.
So with we would still have to do the getting the custom field named as a property, like physically in the code or whatever, on the entity class.
No, well, you generated a class, okay. Right? We did,
yes.
So like we have a template here, which is PHP magic template. Okay. And now we generate the class and we replace PHP magic template with a comment, we replace it with the new properties. Mm-hmm. So now we have potato, apple and banana here, right? And we generate this. We generated this, and together we also taught our class metadata about these new three fields. Mm-hmm. So now these properties are accessible to the PHP engine. You can literally just access them and read and write to them. DRM mm-hmm. will recognize them if you change any of them. So if you do a set or get, no, you can declare them as private and have magic getters and magic setters if you want.
Yep.
But you could have them public and just have them being set. Lazy loading will work on them. And if they're not declared, you will get a crash, which is also potentially what you may want. It's just one approach. I'm just trying to.
That's what I appreciate is coming, thinking through different ideas and looking at this from different angles. Absolutely appreciate that, looking at it from different approaches. Don, sorry, go ahead.
I was going to ask, does that get replaced in line with the actual lead entity class that we have in the lead bundle? Or is there like a proxy class that we then go through?
I would say you have like a, let's say a directory here. It's called like, like the build directory, right? And now build is like, let's say that you have a...
creating a distributable package.
Generate the directory that says entities... And you say this is what is it called? It's a lead with custom fields. You have a new file here and you have literally the entire content of, sorry, I can't navigate this right now. Where is lead? Lead here. You literally have this class here. And in the Composer Outloader, we teach it to load this one before loading lead.
Yeah, okay. No, makes sense.
So we add a hook somewhere in, so we go to vendor autoload.php, and this is just a really rough idea of how it could work because I can't edit this file again. Let me just like make this nice.
Thank you. Fine. Right. And now you say class alias, and you give it lead class, and you say this is lead with custom. That's one way of seeing it. So when the autoloader hits, it will effectively, I think I killed my ID. It's loading because I changed the permissions and it no longer wants to react. But it will practically no longer autoload the old lead class. That's one other way. Another thing you can do is you can say preload eagerly during the kernel bootstrap load that class, which is the generated lead. You can safely do that because your system is about leads. So you're 99% sure you're going to go there. Again, it's not a nice approach, but what it does is it moves a lot of complexity that currently happens at runtime in the repository. You have two queries every time you do something. You have, like, effectively, these custom fields are defined once a month, used hundreds of times a second. That's the problem with it. So you move this problem into a build problem, effectively. The code becomes a bit more generated, maybe a bit more magic, but you can also say, ignore this file, the lead class is this one. And then you have also auto-completion inside your code. If you're writing, for example, an extension, you can rely on the generated code to say, the extension, when it's enabled, it has a lead class that is here. So you would also have static analysis, like, you know, the field exists on the entity because you have the generated version of it. So that's one way of seeing it. Alternatively, other things you can do is instead of having
we move on from this particular implementation, when it comes to, I was looking through Symfony's cache, right? Because Doctrine has a warm-up process in that, and it looks like it's caching the ORM, prod Doctrine, ORM, proxies. These proxy classes. So every time we would create, I guess my question is, every time we'd create a new custom field, would we have to go wipe Symfony's cache and rebuild it in order for Doctrine to regenerate these?
You want to generate the class, write it to disk, modify the system so it can find a new path and make sure everything is flushed, and stop duplication at that point as well, because you don't want a crash after that. If you have new fields and anything relying on them, at that point, you stop the application, just return early, make sure there's no other. I mean, that is a risk factor. You have the administrative action that can break after the edit, but it's an edge case, I would say there. The other thing you can do is you can say this stuff is not here. It's on a use generated lead fields trait, and you generate just a trait. Right, you don't need to replace the entire entity, you just generate the trait, and the trait will have the fields imported and everything. That's a way to at least put everything that is generated somewhere. You know it's generated, don't touch, no touchy, you say on the actual file.
So I think one of the reasons that Alan was asking that is we recently made changes to allow reloading of configuration and stuff where we don't have to smash the cache. We were previously caching each instance had their own Symfony cache running, and now we've made it so it's a shared cache across, and the configuration gets loaded at runtime. So if the proxy classes are cached for all instances, it's not all modic instances. Each modic instance is going to have their own set of custom fields. Will that present a problem?
I see what you mean. Okay, that's multi-tenancy broken. I did not think about multi-tenancy at all. What happens in a multi-tenancy scenario that has custom fields? Does everyone have their own database?
Yes.
It's seen as individual installations.
Why do they have one code base then?
for the SaaS deployment management. Yes.
For this, sorry?
Just managing a SaaS deployment, right? It's not a PaaS. We treat it more as a SaaS. And so it's everyone has their own isolated data, but it's all the shared code. Kind of goes back to...
Explain what the use case is. Like, you have one way of deploying it. I understand you deploy, and then the user connects, and then the database is selected. I'm not sure when it is connected. Is it selected by the application, the database to be used?
It is. Yeah, it is. That's loaded. So, I mean, once upon a time, I just want to stick here that, I mean, with... NDAs and stuff like that, right? And some of this might not be able to go to the community. But we used to, way back in the day, have an individual installation for each customer. And that was part of the long story of why we moved away from using the annotations, because if each installation had the Symfony cache, it'd create an exorbitant amount of files. And then when you have that shared across multiple installations, then you run into inode issues on the system and all of that. So that's when we move more into PHP and try to minimize as much as possible the duplicate code and requirements on the Symfony container. There's also the issue with Symfony container, because each customer, each configuration, like email settings that gets passed on in the Swift mailer and stuff like that, all those are unique. And so whenever you go and change that configuration, then some of those ends up having to rebuild the Symfony cache. It wasn't stable to have to clear that when you're running it as a SaaS. And if it's a single installation, easy to go and wipe it out, rebuild it, you can plan that. But when it comes to a SaaS and our customers are expecting it to be up 99% of the time, you can't stop the application to wipe the cache without risking issues. And then we are also doing that through PHP, which would have its own scale issues of wiping out those cache files and regenerating it. And then thankfully Symfony 3, this is all in Symfony 2, and thankfully Symfony 3 kind of improved a little bit of that to where it doesn't have the collisions of generating containers and stuff. But
I can tell you that until Symfony 5, it's terrible.
Yeah.
I just upgraded to Symfony 5 and Symfony 4 was already like quite a nightmare from a caching and performance perspective. Okay, that is another concern. I don't have an answer right now, because that effectively removes any kind of code generation unless we make the code generation scope per
account. Can we set a separate directory for the Doctrine cache item? So
most likely, done by the Doctrine bundle somewhere.
So that each instance can have their own generated proxies as well as these generated classes.
Yeah, that's possible. It's just that the autoloader is really, really early on in the process.
Yeah.
When you start the application. That's why I was asking, does the application select the database depending on who you are? Because in theory, what you could have is you can have a little authentication application in front of it that kind of like provides something and like, you connect and then you are already inside an account. So the entire authentication, who are you and why you're here and what's your database is decided upfront by another application that just gives you maybe a token and then you do a very minimal thing with it when you trust the token. That's one way, but it obviously complicates deployment for anyone downloading Motic and having to install it themselves.
Yeah,
that's also a big deal. It could be just as simple as index and index2.php. Its problem is that you can't use the autoloader if you want to override parts of it.
Right. So we have we use StackPHP for running a bunch of middleware for various things that need to happen before we boot the application. So we can probably sneak in there somewhere to overwrite some of these.
It's possible. It's just really hard to say guarantee that this class is never loaded before this entire loop is gone. For example, if you use a StackPHP application and you have the StackPHP application, anything that it touches comes from the dependency injection container, then your build step already happened and there goes your metadata loading. Right? It already happened.
and then you have a problem there. The other thing is you probably have background processes, and they are not per customer. You have a SaaS. You have one background process that starts pulling stuff, so the classes are
Our workers are not scoped. Our workers do scope themselves to the instance because they're able to connect specifically to their database.
Yes, but the worker outlives this connection, right? Or does it die after it's connected to an instance, done some work?
Oh, right. Yeah, it's a long-running process that'll continuously pick up jobs from various instances. So
pick up jobs from different customers. That's kind of the problem. Yep. So it's a difficult topic there. Like, that's part of like having a monolithic schema and mixing it with dynamic information. So we have two concerns. One is change things without breaking compatibility for the community that uses this, plugin developers and so on. And the other is a single deployment with a multi-tenancy. And I mean, from an operational point of view, I would just tell you deploy containers as cloud functions or something like that. If you're using a SaaS, have one application developed and something like Google Cloud Run, spin up the application for every customer. It's basically gonna be pay as you go on that, but you have multiple instances instead of having one server, and you pay by the amount of time the customers actually spend on their instances. So now you have worker scope per customer, because multi-tenancy on this, if you want to have a rigid structure on the fields, is a problem. If we were to be able to make one database, one everything for multiple customers, then what you would do is you would have like a customer ID column somewhere, and you would have the custom fields as a blob somewhere, but a massive change everywhere. The other question is the scalability. This is, I suppose, for the SaaS version then. That's the scalability.
It's for both. I mean, there's like at the Modic conference, people are running some stuff in this. We have some installations out there that are running crazy numbers. They're just not using all the features or Modic in the sense that it was, you know, full featured, like they may not be using all the segmentation features, or they're okay with building segments of the period of days or whatever. I mean, there are scale concerns out in the community. There are other companies that have built a SaaS around this project as well. And so they all have it.
Yeah,
they all done it a little different,
I can tell you.
But it's all kind of,
if we break compatibility, we lose customers. That's what I'm saying. They don't upgrade. They move to an X platform, a different platform when they need to upgrade.
Yeah.
So that needs to be considered.
Well, we're very conscious about semantic versioning, and I mean that's if we do a backwards compatibility without a major bump, then that's shame on us.
Right. No, even a major bump, you want to avoid it, because even if it happens and you do it all right, then every time there's a major bump and it's not a trivial change to do, then this is what happened with Zen Framework 1 and Zen Framework 2. I helped develop Zen Framework 2, and then I helped develop Zen Framework 3, and so on and so forth. But every jump you do, you have people that look around and say, oh, look, everyone is using Symfony and Laravel. Why are we not doing it? So it's not even a question of technical interest. It's really about what's the popularity out there, and we're going to stick to that. So like if Magento or Adobe Commerce makes a CRM solution, why would they pick Mautic during an upgrade? That's what I'm saying. So we need to be very careful on backwards compatibility too. So I don't have a full solution in mind in how to do it. I mean, the seed is planted, the ideas are there of what is happening. And it's not a simple problem. It sounds like if you want to stick with the multi-tenancy part, the safest way is to split the caches again, and take the performance impact on that and see how much we can share in caches and how much we can split. Because if you split the caches and you generate the code and the proxies in the individual caches, then you're fine. Everyone gets their own plugin enabled, their own custom fields declared, their own indexes and databases, but you get back to the performance impact of having one cache per customer, which is obviously going to be an inode issue. We could also look at using other approaches for the caching itself. I don't know how many nodes it generates. Mm-hmm. Like annotations, I know it generates because it generates the nodes per annotation. But perhaps we can load the entire metadata and put it in a single cache bucket instead of having, therefore, a whole lot of file per customer. You have one cache file per customer, and you slam just that one. Right, that could be one way of doing it. So the container, maybe see how we can reduce the number of files that are generated. That's not even the problem. I think the problem is really the metadata and all the other little details. So the app kernel would have like a cache directory. You probably had it at some point, the cache directory. Yes, here's something like a definition that was dynamic at some point.
Yeah, this is not, inodes used to be an issue. Even today, if we didn't go that route, we have totally different infrastructure around that, but it's still the shared, or having multiple caches per tenant, per customer, per whatever instance. I think the big issue is maintaining that without causing stability issues when they go and consider adding custom fields. I mean, the solution is great for, let's onboard, you can deal with your custom fields all up front, but then adding custom fields later on or manipulating custom fields would require clearing that cache or wiping it, rebuilding it all during runtime that the application could be tracking. So one of the features on Monik is tracking websites, right? So it's
but just websites. For that customer.
That one customer, yes. So you'd have to, we would have to set expectations that to manipulate custom fields requires downtime of your system.
It's also a limited downtime. You know, like it's a limited downtime. You can like say maybe a drop column is a bit destructive. You could have more issues because you start having failing queries. But it is a limited downtime. It's nothing like major. It's trade-offs, right? We're trying to move more of the definition in the build time, in the startup time of the application. So the application will fail at startup if we don't have everything ready. But it will also lead to major performance impact for the runtime side of things. Yeah. Like major, because you like remove so much complexity from the actual moving parts of the application. You know that if it's a field that is not loading, yes, okay, it's probably the cache. Go in, delete it, and we're done. That's one other way of seeing things. The other thing that you can try and do is to really change the deployment mechanism for this application and say the multi-tenancy is handled upfront, like use a platform that allows you to deploy functions, something like that, like AWS Lambda, something like that, deploy the on Lambda, and then you have one Lambda per customer instead of having all the customers run one system, and then the file system is tracked there, obviously at a price impact, because I have no idea how to estimate it.
Yeah.
It's going to be expensive.
Yeah.
But you get all the scalability you want there.
So Ellen, Doctrine does allow us to set a specific directory for where to load those proxies from. So we can cache proxies on an individual instance basis.
You need to be careful because Symfony does some magic around that, because they try to be clever about loading them up front and stuff like that for the preloading mechanism of 7.4 and so on.
Oh, okay.
I know you're on Symfony 2. Maybe Symfony is a bit dumbed down right now.
We're three now, about to be four.
But they keep adding more magic to the entire startup thing, which is obviously the intentions are good, but in practice, for things that
are effectively edge cases like ours, they could be really killing us. We may need at that point to completely replace the container builder or something like that from Symfony.
Yeah.
Rip it out, use it like they do it, just rip out all the caching parts from it or something like that.
Yeah, I think that's kind of Drupal, you know, use the Symfony components, but they avoided using the whole container thing, or maybe even used it at some point in history and we changed it because of just all the complications.
I like the container with Surface. On the Surface, it's a good component. In practice, when you start using the advanced bits of it, it really is really hard to understand what's going on in there. It makes sense. They have built it very well. It's been well designed to do what it's supposed to do for the Hello World scenario. As soon as you start having things that need to be rebuilt at runtime, you start running into edge cases. So, but I think if we reduce the number of inodes used for caching, I don't know how many customers you want to have on a SaaS, but potentially millions, right? If it goes well.
Yeah, always.
Yeah. Then maybe look at other file systems for mounting the cache. That could also be the another way of doing it. I mean, inodes, yeah. You can mount a file system of a different kind of type, of a different kind of drive that does not run out of inodes in 5 minutes. That could also be one other way of dealing with it. We could use block storage or something like that for the caches.
Yeah, inodes are no longer a problem. We're using a completely different system now than when that was a problem. That was the history behind why we went towards using the PHP drivers rather than annotations or config files, because all this gets translated into multiple, and then having that multiple cache per customer. We can work around that now. And still kind of find a balance there between shared and not shared. I think the big challenge for us at this point would be keeping those. It's a deployment issue right now, deployment issue and a config issue, right? Just having to deal with that container or deal with that cache whenever custom fields are manipulated. Or if we deploy new versions or updates or things like that, is one of the other issues that we've run into, because every update you deploy, you'd have to render that cache for each
yes.
installation that you're managing, and that becomes another deployment strategy. But you know, those are solvable. We've been there, we've done that. We've kind of implemented other things. But I like the
alternative I can think of is to make sure Symfony never caches that area. And at startup, you have one query, in fact, which is like asking for the metadata, and we generate the entity and we load it into memory and do everything, and it never exists in the cache. That's another way of seeing it, but it will not work with long-running processes. That's right. Long-running processes is still not solved, even if we discussed all the caching, because there's only one class definition. So you need to make sure the processes die and spawn up and die and spawn up for every single time they switch from one customer to another.
Unless we get like per instance workers.
Yeah.
Yeah. Or you start scoping the classes per cut. No, you need the class alias. You need a static reference. There's no. Inside the process, in theory, you do that. Or we go full dynamic and we break compatibility. Another alternative that we can do is get rid of the ORM for those entities completely, and use only DBAL in the query operations. This means no associations, no proxies. You only get ever preloaded instances. By the way, how does it work? How does the system currently work if you ask for a lead by identifier to the entity manager instead of the repository? Will it just break? If you do entity manager find lead one.
Yeah, I mean, if it's by ID, it's fine. We don't have a, or you can do it by email. I mean, it just works like the same way, except we don't use that like in the application. We're not calling that unless the circumstance or the use case doesn't require custom fields, which I can't recall anywhere. We do use that for other entities. I just don't think we communicate directly with the entity manager for contact or leads without going through these repository methods that does all the magic.
So you learn to tiptoe around the limitation of the ORM there, because like what I'm seeing is effectively if you have an entity like this and you go through the ORM directly, it will not use your repository logic, and therefore it will no longer work. It will no longer load the custom fields unless you have magic listeners somewhere, which could be.
It's a lot of magic that happens between Chromatic Symphony and Doctrine. but I don't know if that one, that particular case. So the big takeaway from here is I think it's given us some ideas to kind of pursue working on the doctrinal limitations without necessarily restructuring everything, and just kind of how do we solve the deployment issue? Because if we can reduce the complexity of doing all that magic between DBAL and ORM, that would definitely give us some gain in scalability. How we can.
Does a lead have references? Does a lead have references to other stuff? I see it has a user.
Yeah, it does. Most of this, we're not, at least with contacts, we're not dependent on Doctrine's relationship between these things, like the cascading and stuff. What we do depend on it is the foreign key constraint to do the on cascade delete, which is a whole new scale issue that we're actually going to move away from, like getting rid of these foreign constraints and removing that, because it becomes a big issue when you delete mass data. But as far as execution, like we can move a lot of this doctrine entity relationships back elsewhere out of the code or not be dependent on it.
Yeah. It's always a question of also here backwards compatibility again, because I'm thinking if these are relatively flat fields, then what you can do is you can just load them via the query builder. So you do one query in one shot, you just fetch everything. And you hydrate the values like with your custom iterator. It's literally a for each that loops and says, take the value that returned from the database, pass it through the Doctrine DBAL type and convert it to an integer, to a string, to a fruit. And then you have the entity. Now the entity is not known to the ORM, but the ORM needs to be able to know whether it changed. So now what you can do is you can say, ORM, here is an entity, and you can register it at so-called managed. Entity manager, end of work. Let's look at what is this? Patches. I don't want to see no patches. I want this to be official unit of work. There's only patches. Looks like somebody has modified this. This is inside the app assets.
Is this Unity? It must be something the community has. I don't even know what we're doing here.
It's ugly. Anyway, forgetting about the patches for a moment, there's a register manage, I think. This one. Register managed is a very low level trap, but it's there for a reason. So you somehow manage to fetch the entity. And now you are teaching the ORM, when I ask you for an entity by this ID, give me this object that I gave you. And this is the data for the original data. So the ORM learns how to track the changes on the entity. So this way you can reduce the queries to one, potentially. You no longer need to like associate the data and then loop over it. You just like do one query, you join the custom data with it, or you fetch the custom data in one shot, populate all the fields, and then register managed and the ORM. Next time somebody will try to fetch that contact by ID knows, and when it needs to flush, it knows that it needs to save it with that ID and that the data may have changed. So that's another way of doing this. So it's another, like, of course, I think this is a more like a conservative way of dealing with it. So you are like going to the lead repository and you're getting rid of most of that magic. Say we do a deball operation, very, very rough deball operation. You still have the mappings. You don't change any of that. But the creation of the fields and the creation of the collections, like the lazy collections that reference other things, you would do it yourself. So a lot of manually written code there.
Do we have access in this method, or we would just override it?
No, this is a public method on the unit of work. So lead repository. You can imagine that you have, like, this is already doing the fetch, right? Imagine that somewhere when it's doing the fetch, where is it? Here, this one is, no, it's not this one, is it? This one is fetching the other results. It's here, right?
Yeah.
Imagine that here you have deball run query, big chunk of SQL.
Mm-hmm.
Get the result. And you say results is equal that, and you say for each results, I can't type. And here it say entity is equal make entity for the result. And then you say, do you have a this entity manager? We have an entity manager somewhere.
I think it's EM.
It's EM.
Or get entity manager. I think we'll do it too.
Well, let's do EM get unit of work. Register managed. And you give it the entity and you give it the R ID, for example. You say the ID is this one. You have to give it the hydrated ID, I think. And you give it the result, which is the original data, which also needs to be the hydrated result. Let's say hydrated row is equal hydrate R. And you take that. So every kind of like type conversion, like this is a PDO string, needs to be an integer, all of that, you already done that. And now you register it like that. And and then you have your real entity. The entity is registered with the entity manager. In fact, for many of the high performance operations, you may not even want it to land in the entity manager. You may actually want to operate without filling the memory of the entity manager. Mm-hmm. So this is when you split. Right now, this is what is usually done in CQRS. You have two models. One is for writes. So you have a lead and you want to modify it in some way. So during campaigns and during segmentation, you probably don't want to do that.
Mm-hmm.
You probably don't want to modify the actual lead, but you only want to read it. So you may create a kind of a model, which is a DTO, immutable DTO, that is just there for reading. It gets populated with data and you read from it and it's optimized just for that. And when you modify, so you're literally going to the web UI and changing a contact, or maybe during a contact form interaction, because you have a landing page, you fill in your data. In that case, you use the actual contact, the lead, that is the read and write model. So you have two separate concepts. One is the reading optimized version. One is the reading and writing version. So in that case, you could like split this out. So there's like a lot of lots of food for thought there. I'm just
So for now, we have three ideas, therefore. One is go radical, change the schema, break the community. One is problematic because of backgrounds workers and the SaaS solution. And then we probably have a middle ground, which is try to take the hit as it is, but at least remove the ORM from it, which will make it a bit simpler, especially for operations like segmentations. I can imagine that a background worker that has to work on a segment, and the segment is every user that has been registered within last year, could be a lot of records. And in that case, you probably want to operate not with an array, but you want to work with an iterator, maybe. And you probably don't want to even have to do with ORM. You're just reading data. You just want to operate on the read data. But this will break any plugin that does any trigger logic and writes back.
Yeah, I think today it's what it does. Today, segmentation doesn't use entities. Now, what we do whenever we add people, we dispatch it. Well, even then, I don't think it might use an array. We've worked around entities for segmentation for that reason.
Yeah.
Campaigns and others. Yeah. Yep. Okay. Unfortunately, we are kind of over and I've got a job. I think this is really great. This has given us some challenge and thinking from different perspectives, and we'll have to chew on it for sure. We'll chew on it and come back with some more questions and things. And the next one, maybe look at, I have to think through what will be the next one of importance.
I mean, we can also see what everyone decides, because like there's people that haven't been joining the call because of other reasons today. So maybe they have other ideas. Maybe this has been already tried and we haven't heard of them. So let's first throw it out there. See what the discussion is. Literally sleep over it. Don't overthink it right now. We discussed, we have a few approaches. We maybe have even more approaches, because you saw, we just kept discussing and we found more approaches. We don't need to settle on these. Yeah. We don't need to develop a tunnel vision. Viable stuff. Always with compromises, because let's be honest, you can't have the ideal code and also make money. That's fine. Let's literally sit over it, sleep over it, and think of it like you don't need to solve the problem tomorrow. Discuss maybe next Tuesday if we need more time, or if we want to focus on something else and this needs to stay in the back burner, we can decide that.
Yeah, I think it's good. I mean, just to say, I mean, we've as I said before, we have a limited budget here, and I want to maximize our use of your time and getting some ideas and triggering thoughts that we can maybe run with it. So we might not send things to full solutions or resolution, but definitely want to help us challenge us to look at things from different perspectives and different ways, as we've done exactly with this conversation. So that's the big value here.
Yeah, that's fine. I mean, for me, this is interesting, because I built systems like this. What I cannot show you the system that I've built that revolves around this, but that was also multi-tenant. And I can't show you, but I can also go back and look at what I've built and see if I have ideas that I can pull from there, because they solve the custom fields in a completely different way.
Okay.
Yeah.
Great. All right. Well, then we have next week scheduled, and we'll follow up.
Yeah, cool. Well, about the notes, let me know. I haven't managed to keep up with all of that during the discussion. Sorry.
Yeah, that was part of it as well. I wanted to record it, because I know note taking can become very distracting.
Makes sense. I'll make at least a high-level bullet point list and maybe mail it to the group or something like that, and you decide where to put it for now. Okay?
Yeah, sounds great. Awesome. Thank you so much.
All right. Thanks, Marco.
Have a good one. See ya.
Bye.
Yeah, thanks. Bye.